I prepared a Dharma talk for tonight, mainly about personality and how our personality interacts with our practice and things like that. But we don't have to. We don't have to do this. We have an alternative because of the disturbing things that have happened over the last few days in our country. Things that have, I know all of you are very upset, maybe confused, maybe sad. We are experiencing things that are tearing apart our society. So, as an alternative to this talk, we could, if you like, spend the next 45 minutes or so just having an open-ended discussion about your thoughts and your feelings about what's going on these days and how our practice relates to it, and maybe in your ideas about what ways our practice can be helpful to ourselves, to others. So we could have that kind of a discussion without an agenda, just free form. So what would you like to do? How many of you would prefer to hear the Dharma talk? How many of you would prefer to have the discussion? Okay. It's okay.
We could fight over it.
Fight. You go home and get your sign. Well, let's proceed with the talk, and we'll have our discussion at another time. And there will be more than one discussion about what's going on, because it definitely relates, you know, that kind of problem and suffering that it relates to our practice, and it would be really good to explore how we can be helpful. Well, first thing I wanted to point out was when we read the literature, Buddhist literature, Zen literature, we read about the Buddha, and we read about the other teachers and the lineage, the patriarchs, and all these well-known, these iconic people from China and Japan. And we read their stories. But when we get over the excitement of it, or the novelty of the stories, we realize that these Buddhas and these patriarchs were not extraordinary people. They didn't have any secret power, no magic powers. They didn't have any private secrets. And they were not mysterious. No. They're known as Buddhas, patriarchs, because they were people who were in tune with reality. Reality with a big R. They were in tune with reality, and that's what gave them their special quality. So, but what do we mean by that business of in tune? In tune means not caught by delusions, not being fooled. Not caught by delusions, which also means not letting anything get in the way of our vision and of our desire to live the authentic life. In tune with reality means not trapped by our own self-centered mind. In other words, not caught by our own personality. This is a Buddha, a patriarch, not caught up in our own personality. And each of those individuals, each of those Buddhas, and each of those patriarchs, and each of those teachers, they all have a personality, all individual and unique personalities. But the key is, what made them the kind of individual that we respect and want to learn from is they didn't allow their personality to get in the way of their understanding. Their actions in their daily life were in accordance with their understanding, not driven by their personality. So they acted with energy, with joy, with compassion, and they always made sure they were creating good relationships with one another, with everybody they met. And of course, this sort of thing is within everybody's reach. But that's what they were good at. That's why they were known as Buddhas. For most people, our personality influences our understanding. And sometimes our personality can become like a very tight filter, you know. Where nothing gets in. Understanding is blocked because our personality is pushing it out. But sometimes a filter can have big holes and won't really restrict the flow. Won't really restrict the flow of understanding so that we can see things as they are, even with our personality. So we try not to let our personality be a very tight filter, but have it open up some space so that the wisdom can flow through. But sometimes the filter is very fine. The openings are very tiny. And so very little gets through. And what does get through creates distortions. Because it is so ragged. And that, of course, leads to stubbornness, stubborn mind. This is what a tight personality can do. Create stubbornness and distorted view. So in our practice, in Zen practice, we don't deny that we all have a personality. You know, we don't say, or I don't think I've ever heard any or read any Zen book where some teacher says, you have to kill your personality. Can't do that. We all have a personality, so we don't deny it. We simply don't allow this personality to distort our understanding. Our Zazen mind means we allow our understanding to come through without being filtered by our personality. There's no screening. When we do Zazen wholeheartedly, we don't screen whatever is happening. Our experience is not distorted. In other words, when we do Zazen in that way without filter, we can see things as they are. And we can see our relationships as they are. And that's important because sometimes in our relationships with each other, we miss something. It escapes our attention, it escapes our understanding, we miss something, and the relationship hits a bump. So Zazen practice is how we train our mind to see things without a tight filter of a personality. So in other words, if we want to understand each other, and not just those of us in this room tonight, but if we want to understand each other in a very large sense, we have to see them We have to see each other beyond our personality and understand how every life, every human being is inherently expounding the truth with their life. And we want to understand how to help and encourage the Dharma to come forth and not be hindered by personalities or biases. This is what we're working on. And here is a blank page. How did that happen? I think my printer has a personality. So, we each have a personality, some kind, and feelings and emotions will come up from time to time, and we have no need to try to prevent them. You know, you shouldn't have emotions. We don't say that, because it's impossible. So, for example, getting angry sometimes will happen. Getting irritated, impatient, it will happen. But the anger, when it comes up, does not have to continue for a long time. So if something in our personality comes up that is something we don't admire about ourselves, but it came up anyhow, we simply don't allow ourselves to hang on to it. You know, sometimes you may get angry about something or get angry at someone and it feels really good. But in our practice, we don't hang on to that. That aspect of our personality that can tighten up the filter. So there's no need for us to try to fix ourselves. We don't have to fix ourselves to prevent feelings from happening. We don't need to transcend ourselves. In the last 50 years or so, in the New Age kind of thinking, there's the idea that we need to transcend ourselves. But we don't have to transcend ourselves. When we see other people as Buddha, we won't stay angry at them. When we see ourself as Buddha, we won't stay sad or angry. So the emphasis of our practice is to see things clearly rather than try to fix ourselves or fix our personality. There's no need to fix ourselves. But we do need to see our personality clearly and not become caught by delusions. And when we do that, we can see who we really are in a large sense. And so when we no longer worry about fixing ourselves, it means we are no longer concerned about protecting ourselves. And that's how we can give life to our true self. When we don't worry about taking care of our small self and our reputation and our image and those sorts of things. When we don't worry about that, we can give life to who we are truly. So what happens in this Zendo, or wherever it is you sit in Zazen, we allow life to flow from our Zazen practice. Zazen being the base point. And then we let our everyday life flow from our true self. And this is known as wisdom or understanding. So after we have a period of zazen somewhere, at home or here, or on the BART train, which I do sometimes. When we get up from zazen and go about some activity, we try to continue our zazen mind in the activities of our everyday life. And we try to continue zazen mind without a break. That's tricky. From your own experience, you know how tricky that is. In the midst of a busy world, where all kinds of distractions are coming at us, and sudden surprises and disturbing things, it takes quite an effort to continue zazen mind. But with experience, it gets more and more natural. It feels more and more natural. And we can allow our zazen mind just to continue without making too much effort to do so. So we continue our zazen mind without a break, not just at certain times, and not only when it's convenient. Because our zazen practice is not designed for comfort, and it's also not designed for discomfort. It's just what it is. So we try not to put a label on it. So if we say, whoa, the zazen period is too long, or we say, it's too short, or we say, it's too hard, this is one of the ways we have of protecting our small self. This is how we are attached to our personality. So if we think like that about zazen or about anything, we cannot feel ourselves. We cannot feel our true self. So, our practice is about setting aside what the personality wants. Let's put that aside. We practice with determination, with the best posture we can have, with an ungrasping attitude. In other words, a selfless attitude. And we try to do this continuously without a break. If we have that attitude, and if we have that kind of determination and sincerity, our personality will not get in the way of our understanding. On the contrary, our understanding will influence our personality. What we call the small mind, you know, the ego, and that part of us that has all these desires that it wants to fulfill, the small mind depends on various emotions for its happiness. Happiness is generally understood as fulfilling our desires. And if we live our life that way, you know, pursuing happiness by pursuing desires, that approach to life will definitely influence our personality. The practice, Suzuki Roshi always talked about big mind. The practice encourages big mind as in contrast to our small mind, because the small mind cannot accept that happiness, when it does come, is transitory. The small mind can't accept that. Finds satisfaction and joy and happiness and really wants to hold it, but it can't last because things change. Small mind has a hard time with that. The small mind cannot accept the fact that our desires continue. They're always arising. And the greatest suffering is that the small mind does not know what it is that brings joy. It thinks it does, but there's a misunderstanding. So in our practice, our personality does not interfere with our understanding. And in our practice, our understanding and our actions are not hindered by our desire, our desires. And if we practice, if we make our best effort to practice continuously, we will recognize our carelessness and our selfish activities and our desires. We will recognize the careless activities of ourself, the careless activities of others, and we will not be fooled by our personal self-interest. So there is no confusion about how to proceed with our life. There's no confusion when we don't allow our personality to hinder our understanding, because that is how we can see things as they really are. Does anyone have a question? Yes, please.
You said that we don't want to find our personality hindering our understanding of the truth. And it also seems like we said that important or valuable to pay attention to the smallest thing, which seems like it could be the most immediate thing. And my question is it possible that the truth isn't so objective as much as it is the most immediate thing right there, which is whatever my personality is building in the way of a filter, that most immediate thing to pay attention to could include my filter building, and that it's not so objective, but could be my truth could look very subjective because of whatever my personality happens to be doing.
Yes, that's true. We often say, we always say in our practice, take care of the smallest thing that's in front of you. Take care of what it is that you have to do right now. Pay attention to it. And that could include pay attention to your personality to make sure that you can take care of the thing that you need to take care of. So taking care of watching our personality proceeds along with taking care of the objective thing. You know, sometimes people say, "Oh, I know I'm stubborn," or "I know I get angry easily. I know that." Well, when we know that, then we need to pay attention to that when we have relationships with each other and with things. I'm stubborn. Watch it. Don't let it get in the way. And so it's not so much that the stubbornness is a problem. The fact that we are making an effort to be aware of it is our practice, is the most sincere form of devotion. I know my habits, I know my limitation. I'm not going to let them. If I want to take care of this relationship or this thing, I'm not going to let that get in the way. Is it kind of like a vow we make to ourselves? Thank you. Yes, Anna.
How should we adjust when someone else's truth is very different than ours?
How should we object?
Adjust.
Be flexible. Make sure we don't confront. Don't confront. Oh, your understanding is different. Let's not do that. Don't do that, because that doesn't help at all. We just stay flexible and say, "Oh, tell me more." And that way we learn more. And we also create a good feeling. The other person says, "Oh, she pays attention to me. That's nice." So what we understand and how it may differ from somebody else's understanding is not nearly as important as how we are with each other when there are no words. It's a good question. Thank you. Umar.
So that with this presence of mind this non-grasping attitude that we have, and the world that we're living in right now, it is so easy to get taken away with sad events that have happened recently, and or something joyous that really comes along, you know, takes you this way or that way, and it can really take you away. But having that presence of mind and that sense of non-attachment, is there a possibility of taking that personality, which is basically what I want, and turning it into creating relationships than destroying relationships?
Yes, that's our goal, to be creative. Our question is always, what's the most creative thing I can do in this situation? If it's an easy situation or it's a difficult situation, what's the best thing I can do right now? rather than complain that the situation is not ideal, what can I do? That's always our question. Thank you. Yes, Richard.
When you were talking about the filters, some more open filters and some are tighter, I sort of visualize this as you describe it. I get this catalog of a metal supplier, and they have grating and screens, and they rate how much of it is open space and how much is it solid, like percentage-wise, for different uses, some decorative or different uses. And I realize, maybe my filter is like a variable filter. I have like different ones. I can be more closed or more open on different situation. When I have lunch with a friend of mine, I'm more open. With my sister, it's like guarded. It's different. So is that what you're describing the filter as? Interpersonal and along those lines, when you say personality, does that mean like identity and ego, or is that somewhat different? Ego and personality.
I think we want to try our best to be unguarded, no matter who we're with. Even if with someone who always feels troublesome because their viewpoint seems so at odds with what we believe should be, we should try not to be guarded, just be. It won't hurt to listen and not judge. It doesn't hurt. And something creative may come out of it. So we try not to be guarded. We don't want to become known as a person who is guarded. Then nobody will talk to us. We want to give people the feeling that we are open and we don't screen them. And your second question was about...
How you mean the word personality? Is that kind of synonymous with ego, or is it somewhat different?
They're not necessarily the same. We could have a personality that's has no ego, even though sometimes we get angry or impatient. Our personality does not have to have an ego. But when we have a strong ego and always projecting a certain kind of person, that ego becomes our personality. But we don't have to be caught. If we're not caught by our personality, then there is no ego. Mm-hmm. Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Good questions. Yes, please.
What is the reality that we're trying to see?
Oh. We chanted it earlier tonight. Oh, yes, excuse me. Yes, please.
Do you think with scientific discovery around neurotransmitters and neurochemicals, that the vernacular might be refreshed to express express some of these ideas as trying to control neurochemical imbalances, some of which may feel good and some of which may feel bad. And so where previously there was a language of emotions, that there may be a more descriptive language from science.
I don't. I strongly don't believe that we should allow science to tell us how to relate to the world. I think we have to, if we really want wisdom, if we really want to express our inherent wisdom, we have to make our own effort to deal with all the things that come up in our life and all the things we see, the good and the bad and the troublesome. We have to make our own effort. If we start injecting synthetic or foreign chemicals into our system to help us do it better, we stop making our best effort. We start relying on a chemical or an electronic impulse or something. We start relying on something outside of ourself to bring us wisdom or happiness or whatever it is we want. So I think there's a tendency to go in the way you speak of.
I don't think, I think there's two parts actually that come from that. One is, that's not what I'm suggesting. I'm actually just suggesting that there's a more descriptive language in our natural neurochemicals. So an example might be in reaction to an adversarial situation, our cortisol levels be raised, stress hormones. And so this is a different language to describe feelings that might otherwise be unhappiness, and it's a more distinct language. And I'm wondering if you think that is a more useful language.
Oh.
And since you raised it, I do have a second question, which is, I'm going to borrow from the book Richard, which is, there are people who very much struggle with neurochemical imbalances and would look to physicians to help them.
Oh, I see.
Do you leave room for help in those scenarios? Like Prozac has been a revolutionary drug for many people.
Oh, okay.
Two parters.
Yes, I think that. Yes, that's compassionate. In the same way that if somebody has an accident and they lose a hand, to give them an artificial hand is a good thing. You know, it's a compassionate thing. The same way if there is some imbalance in that, if our natural balance is upset in some way, I think it's a good thing to try to correct that imbalance. So that we can make our best effort. But you talked about, is there a better language? If we talk in, maybe I'm not quite clear. If we talk about the chemistry of it rather than, I'm not sure, what did you mean? Can you explain that?
The sure, part? If we talk about the chemistry of our reactions, and so these are often what might have been regarded as emotions before, you can potentially have more precision, and you can be perhaps more able to observe yourself when you have that more descriptive scientific language.
Oh.
I see.
Okay. Well, our understanding and wisdom doesn't depend on language. There are no words to describe the truth. So the language that we use is just some temporary thing to allow us to be with each other every day. But the truth itself is revealed through our effort, and it has no language. Thank you. Oh, again? Okay. Okay.
So is the Buddha always happy and joyful, or is he or she more like a calm lake without any particular positive or negative emotions?
Did you ever look at the smile on the statue of the Buddha? That will answer your question.
What about, is it really not possible for happiness to last long? is it transitory, as in what sense?
Well, it depends on our understanding of the meaning of happiness. If we misunderstand the meaning, then it will... But if we really understand what it takes to make us feel satisfied in our life, if we really understand that, then we have peace of mind all the time. Thank you. Yes, please.
So I started wondering, so what is effort? Is it an attempt to improve oneself, or is it something else?
Effort?
Effort, yes. Because it seems to be the key to everything.
And that's a really good question. There's a saying in our practice about effortless effort. Effortless effort. Usually we feel, in order to do something, I have to make an effort. And if I don't want to do it, or if I feel resistance, I have to make an effort. But when we get to the point of not having to make that effort, where we just do, effortless effort. But we start with some stubbornness of mind, and we have to encourage ourselves to make an effort sometimes. You know, it's like a child who doesn't want to do homework. Come on, make the effort. And then someday the child just studies and does things. But nobody has to say. So there's effort, and then there's effortless effort. Thank you. Bunny.
I have a comment about your question, because I was on Prozac, so I can actually speak to it. And I don't want to take up a lot of time, but I will say that I was put on Prozac when I was 16 years old, and it was a very compassionate thing because I needed it. It helped me to function in a way, numbing out some pain, in a way, you know, blocking some things that I wasn't able to process, like there's too much to process. But long term, like when I was in my early 20s, I had a hard time getting off the drug. So I wanted to be free, I wanted to be off, but I kept having withdrawal. And at that point, I started doing research, and I basically had to make a lot of life changes, nutritional support, chiropractic, many different things. And now, for many, many years, I've been off the drug and been completely healthy and also don't have the side effects, right? So I'd say that there's a place for, you know, psychiatric medicine where it's needed, but a lot of times we are over-prescribed because we're not addressing the root causes. So anyone who has questions about that or is struggling with that, I'd be happy to talk about it.
Thank you. Thank you.